Isle of the World. I'm John Batchelor. Headline, Guardian. Cumbria coal mine digs a hole for Britain's climate policy. Subhead, Michael Gove's decision to approve a new mine is greeted with anger and frustration. I go immediately to Simon Constable, who is in the south of France in Occitane, but certainly is informed about the British government, the Sunak government's paradoxical approach to energy as it turns colder and colder in Northern Europe as the next three winters are not assured for energy resources. And yet, Simon, a very good day to you. West Cumbria Colliery is being reawakened and coal will be produced again in Mother Britain. This is wonderful. It is part of the heritage of the Industrial Revolution, the collieries of Britain. But this is striking in that this is the same government led by Rishi Sunak that reversed the decision to frack in Britain. There's lots of natural gas under the British soil, and yet fracking is banned, and they're opening a colliery again for coal. Simon, can you explain this? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. It's really hard to explain this. I feel like if I was in a room with Rishi Sunak, I said, you've got some splaining to do, because he really does. So it's not only has fracking been banned in Britain, and as you mentioned, the first coal mine, new coal mine to be approved by the government in 30 years is going to go into action. We've also got Rishi Sunak cutting a deal with the US to import even more US natural gas, a massive proportion of which is fracked. So fracking's okay if you do it in America, and we can buy it. I would say we, Britain, can buy it. And fracking is not allowed, even though it's probably a lot safer to get natural gas out of the ground and burn that than it is to burn coal, which has mercury in it and causes your kids to have neurological diseases. I'm finding it really hard to understand this. I do know one small thing about the new pit, the new mining pit that's going to be developed, is that it's in an underdeveloped area of the UK. So they need a lot of jobs. So this may be a vote gathering escapade, but it is weird.
Let's go to the United States, which is part of the conversation about importing liquefied natural gas to an island that won't frack itself, but is insisting upon the bounty of the US. We have lots of natural gas. It's cheap here. We have lots of coal. It's cheap here. We have lots of oil. Yep. You know all these things, Simon. And yet,
yes,
we go to the White House and the advisor for the Biden administration, Mr. Hochstein, lambasts, that is the appropriate word, the big energy companies for not doing more drilling and production and insisting upon taking their profits and returning them to the investor class with either buybacks or dividends. Simon, the paradox of London is complicated by the paradox of Washington. Didn't the Biden administration on the first day boast about how they shut down a pipeline? Explain this, Simon.
Well, again, it's really hard to explain this one. And it's actually not just the Biden administration. It goes back to his previous boss, President Obama, under the 8 years of the Obama administration. So in this one, so you shut down a pipeline. They've also tried to restrict new leases for drilling oil on federal lands. That was in February this year, and it got overturned when we were having a kind of a bit of an energy crisis in August. So that's weird. And if you go back to Obama, you have periods where he basically tried to swamp the oil industry in masses of regulations. The idea was to make sure that fossil fuel prices were higher. Now, Hochstein's come along, and I pity the guy in a way, because he's done a basically he's the guy who's doing the reverse ferret maneuver for the Biden administration. And that's a British term, which means it's a quick switcheroo. Now that the previous policies, which were up until a few weeks ago, we don't like fossil fuel, we're now going for, oh, it's all these energy companies' fault and they should just pump more. Even though the policy from Democrats for quite a long time has been, don't pump more, we need electric cars. It's bizarre, it's weird, and I pity the guy.
No pause for the contradictions of energy policy, because we rush immediately to London, where you used to live, Simon. Great yes. Britain. It is completely strangled by strikes promised from ambulance drivers, from nurses. The train system is out. In fact, it's all the way into January. You can schedule days that you're not going to be able to move between major cities. You know how much Great Britain depends upon the trains. These strikes are not called a general strike, but it sure looks like coordination. Labor is a little anxious about this because Keir Starmer has said, I ban any members of parliament in the Labour Party from joining the strike line. I mention all this. You're familiar with strikes and how it works because there's rumor that there are going to be strikes in France as well. This has to do with pensions and working longer. I don't remember exactly, but I think in France you can retire in your 50s with full allotments from the government. And Mr. Macron wants to revise it. So strikes have come to Europe. Is this part of the war in Ukraine? Is this normal conduct? I don't remember the scale of strikes in London before the pandemic and before the war.
It is interesting. I mean, strikes in the UK and strikes in France are quite different. First of all, the quip, which has a lot of truth in it, is that if British workers running the trains go on strike, it's hard to know whether they're actually on strike or whether it's normal service, because the normal service is usually quite appalling. So whether the train will actually show up at all and pick you up and move you to where you want to go is always up for grabs when it's operating. So it's not much worse when they're on strike. In France, it's somewhat different in that it really is to do with worker rights. And it will be very interesting to see what happens with Macron, whether he can thread the needle to say, look, we have an aging population and we need younger workers to work longer so that the elderly can be supported. That's going to be a tough one for him. But I will say this for France. If the trains do go on strike, we will notice the difference. I was on a train to and from Toulouse, and it showed up on time. It was clean. The staff were fantastic, polite, and very helpful. And the same on the way back. And I've got to say, I was really impressed. Oh, and the price was cheap, too. So we'll notice if that's gone. And that will be a problem.
Simon, I want to make sure everybody understands that there's not a representative of the EU standing behind you right now making these positive remarks. Is that correct?
No, I'm always up for criticizing things when they're wrong. And I haven't seen it yet. Maybe there is something wrong. And there is no one behind me except a black cat. And the black cat is sleeping in front of the fire, which is keeping me warm, which is very nice.
Even as he speaks, Simon is becoming a member of the EU. This is a very positive, is a very positive development. Now, I want to mention the climate, because it's going to be a major story, not only this year, but next winter and the winter after. There are no provisions made right now to get through the winter of 23-24. However, we're told, Simon, that there are more than adequate storage of natural gas. They filled up before the cutoff for this winter. We're also told that oil is pumping, that gasoline is coming, that refined gas is coming, and the expectation of the recession means that people are using it less. So have you seen any disruption in energy prices in the south of France, or have you heard from your friends back home that the energy prices are stabilizing or are they spiking? What's your perception?
Stabilizing, very much stabilizing at the moment. Obviously, when you have cold snaps like we had here in Occitane, you get prices higher for electricity and things like that, but they do in general tend to be stabilizing. I went and with my wife, and we got some a massive shed load of wood to burn in the stove to keep warm, and there's plenty of that around, although not as much as last year. So I do think as ever, the cure for high prices is high prices, because it incentivizes people to make more of that energy. So more wood, more oil being pumped. People are being more conservationist about what they use. They don't overheat their homes. They just heat what they need to keep comfortable and, not die. So, yeah, it is stabilizing, and that's a very good sign. I'm hoping that the weather doesn't get worse here. If it does, then all bets are off. We'll see. But I don't think it will.
And the diesel prices, I've checked on those before you, because you use diesel for your vehicle, and diesel is the fundamental of farming, and you're in the farming district of France. Have you seen the diesel prices move higher or lower?
They've stayed the same. That's one of the things I look at every time I pass a gasoline station. I look at they call it gas oil here, and I look at that, and they're very stable. They're not moving up and down at all. I mean, it's just absolutely stable. Every week, you know, for the last few weeks, they've been, you know, a little under €2 a liter. Which you times that by four, and you've got a gallon. So yeah, it's stabilizing, which is very good. And maybe that's because the shortage is over, and it's certainly it's not getting worse. And we'll see what happens.
Simon Constable, writing for Forbes and the Wall Street Journal and other distinguished publications. He's in the south of France, in paradise.